Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and with us today, and in our final segment discussing the future of the Coast Guard, is our very special guest, Admiral Thad Allen, Commandant of the United States Coast Guard. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Courtney Bromley. Admiral, I'm sure collaboration is critical to the Coast Guard's mission. So with this, how is the Coast Guard enhancing coordination and collaboration among the components of DHS and DOD, and in particular with the U.S. Navy?
Well, I can tell you unequivocally that there's no finer partner in the world to operate with than Gary Ruffhead, the Chief of Naval Operations. And I would tell you the same relation existed with Admiral Mike Mullen before him, before he became Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. We've had an evolving relationship with the Navy for over 200 years. But I would tell you in the last 10 or 15 years, it has never been stronger. A lot of it had to do with my predecessor, Admiral Jim Loy, and Jay Johnson, when he was the Chief of Naval Operation, coming up with something they called the National Fleet Concept, which when you look at the naval forces of the United States, you don't look at a Navy and a Coast Guard and a Marine Corps. You look at all of them as a combined naval force. And so you need to look at high-end Coast Guard cutters and low-end combatants and how does that all come together in a national fleet concept. That has played out over the years. We have routine meetings with the Navy. I meet with Gary Ruffhead quite a bit, but we've actually expanded that now. And it's not only Gary Ruffhead, but it's General Jim Conway, Commandant of the Marine Corps. And we have three-way conversations. That culminated, at least on my watch, in the fall of 2007 at the International Sea Power Symposium in Newport, Rhode Island, where the three of us stood on a stage and rolled out a 21st century maritime strategy for the country that for the first time had all three signatures on it. And that was a precedent. In the history of the United States.
So staying with this theme, regarding your international partnerships, how does the Coast Guard bring unique value to this collaboration?
Well, in two ways. First of all, we're in high demand from the geographical combatant commanders to assist them in what's called theater security cooperation. And what I would say there is that when you get down below the 10 or 15 largest countries in the world, most of those nations aren't trying to project naval sea power. Most of those nations' national security concerns, at least in the maritime area, have to do with fish stocks, illegal migration, drug smuggling, oil and offshore oil, gas exploration offshore. Those all call for the requirements of a Coast Guard or a Coast Guard-like organization. I have never seen the relevancy of the Coast Guard or Coast Guard-like agencies higher globally than I do right now. And there's a great demand for us to go out and work with nations that have emerging requirements to create Coast Guard-like functions. The second issue would be we have over the years developed two very, very successful collaboration fora. One is the North Pacific Coast Guard Forum. The other one is the North Atlantic Coast Guard Forum. The Pacific Forum is over 10 years old. It includes the United States, Canada, Russia, South Korea, Japan, and China. We recently hosted a meeting last fall in San Francisco. It was our turn to host. Through that forum, we collaborate multinational operations. I'll give you a good example. Last year, we actually seized a vessel that was illegally fishing in the Pacific, long gill nets that are basically outlawed internationally. That was accomplished by Japanese and Canadian aircraft patrolling, queuing up sightings, passing that to a U.S. Coast Guard cutter that had a Chinese shipwriter on board that was empowered to enforce Chinese law that resulted in the detention of the ship and escorting it to China.
Admiral, I know you're a proud graduate of the United States Coast Guard Academy. Can you talk about how valuable you believe these service academies are in building the strong and competent future leaders that we have across the military services and their training to meet the challenges and threats of this ever-changing world?
Well, I think academies have a great role to play in all the services. And in fact, we have a good collegial relationship. As you know, there's a lot of rivalry between the service academies. But in general, they were originally established, frankly, as engineering schools to produce engineers for the services. West Point was originally established to create Army engineers. We draw a lot of talent in the engineering fields from our academies. Now, that said, I think we have a larger challenge today, and that's the diversification of our officer corps. And when I talk about diversity, I'm talking about ethnic and gender, but I'm also talking about by backgrounds and accession points. So we need the Coast Guard Academy to produce people that have a strong background in the engineering disciplines. But we also have an officer candidate school. We take direct commissions for lawyers and so forth. And we have some programs with universities where we take folks that are entering their sophomore year and we actually bring them into Coast Guard as enlisted people, pay for the last 2 years of school, and then bring them into the Coast Guard. What that creates overall is what we like to call cognitive diversity, and that's a variety of viewpoints that can be brought to bear to increase the fidelity and the robustness of what you're trying to do as an officer corps. And the other part of it is the fact that we are trying very, very hard to increase the diversity at the Coast Guard Academy. We are doing well in increasing minority representation. We're doing very well with the representation of women, anywhere between 25% and 30% any particular year there. But the underrepresented minorities at the Coast Guard Academy are a challenge for us right now, and we have taken that on as a significant cause that we need to increase the number of minorities at the Coast Guard Academy.
Now, Admiral, I understand that your four-year term expires in May of 2010. How would you characterize the evolution of the Coast Guard and envision the Coast Guard over the next few years? And what would you like your legacy to be as you look beyond your tenure?
Well, it really relates to repositioning the service to be more flexible and agile in our current operating environment. And as I mentioned earlier, the modernization that we're going through right now is not intended to achieve a specific goal, although there's a set of objectives. It has to do with maintenance and logistics, command and control, finance, and so forth. Those are only the work items at hand. What I'm really trying to do is create a change-centric organization that continually adapts to its environment. And that really is a much more daunting task than it would appear. You can go through a work list and complete it, but to take an organization and say we're going to change how we think, how we act, how we interact with our environment and fundamentally change our business processes is really what we're doing right now. If there was an enduring any legacy that I would like to have in the Coast Guard, it would be that we moved substantially towards creating a Coast Guard that was capable of sensing changes in demand signal and reacting to that and being proactive and out in front and not dealing with latent indicators that need us to realign our resources and do what this country needs us to do.
So, Admiral, you've enjoyed a long and distinguished career serving our country. What advice would you give to a person who's out there perhaps thinking about a career in public service, but in particular maybe a young person who may be interested in the Coast Guard?
Well, for public service and the Coast Guard in particular, I think there are a couple of things. First of all, in public service, you have to have a propensity to serve. That may sound like a trite statement, but you have to have an orientation where the satisfaction you're going to get in life moves beyond just the salary, which is always going to be modest in public service, but extends to something where the psychic income you're getting is because you're attached to something that's much larger than yourself. That's not to say you can't do that in the private sector. But particularly in the Coast Guard, it only takes one time reaching down to that hand that's sticking out of the water and pulling that person onto a boat, and you're pretty much hooked at that point on our mission set. Running the gamut from law enforcement to search and rescue and what we call all threats and all hazards, the profile of our mission set added to a predisposition for public service really, really is a significant draw. We've had a couple of really good years in recruiting. People really want to get in the Coast Guard because they understand this notion of public service and being connected to something larger than yourself, and then moving that into a maritime environment with a propensity to operate on the water and having liking to be on the water, I think is very, very important. You put those two together, the Coast Guard makes a very, very, very attractive career. I didn't think I was going to stay in. I was going to do my 5 years and get out. I just kind of kept hanging around, and you never know what's going to happen. But, well, you hang around because of the mission, and it doesn't take too many of those successful search and rescue cases. And even the ones that don't come out the way you want to, when you talk to families that are putting so much on the line in hopes that you will be able to do something and create the art of possible where none exists for their family, it doesn't take too much of that to hook you.
Admiral, unfortunately, we have reached the end of our time. I want to thank you for fitting us into your busy schedule. But more importantly, Courtney and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to our country over your 38-year career at the U.S. Coast Guard.
Thank you. We were talking about social media earlier. If anybody wants to keep involved and understand what's happening, there are two places you can do it. My blog is iCommandant. If you just Google that, it'll come up. And we also have a Commandant of the Coast Guard, Thad Allen, Facebook account that automatically feeds over through an RSS feed what's on the blog. So we're out there on the web.
That's great. Thank you. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Admiral Thad Allen, Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard. My co-host has been Courtney Bromley, leader within the IBM Public Sector Homeland Security Industry Team. As you enjoy the rest of the day, please take time to remember the men and women of our armed and civil services abroad who may not be able to hear this morning's show on how we're improving their government, but who deserve our unconditional respect and support. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Albert Morales. Thank you for listening.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.